Okay, well, good morning, everyone. I think we're going in order of height, so I'll bring things down a little bit here. First of all, welcome to Chicago. I think I'm the one on the panel who is the native Chicagoan. There is a lot more to our city than McCormick Place. So I hope, and we've ordered up some just spectacular weather for you, record-breaking weather, not just nice, but record-breaking. So not only hopefully will that facilitate your travel in and out, but hopefully that will encourage you to get out and walk around the city, visit the lakefront, get to know us a little bit. There's a lot to see, and Chicago is an interesting place. So my name is Susan Longworth. As was said, I'm a senior business economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. And so since I'm from the Fed, I'll start my presentation with our disclaimer. Doug's heard it many times since it's become quite close to us. The opinions I'm going to express are my own, not those of the Federal Reserve, the Federal Reserve System, or of the Board of Governors. So now we can let the fun begin. Another little piece about me is that actually, though I'm an economist at the Fed right now, I actually started my career in public health, administering a series of public health grants in Africa and the Middle East, looking specifically at blindness prevention. And specifically, we worked on river blindness and trachoma, which, if any of you are familiar with those, are very much community-based diseases. And so I think very early in my career, without even really realizing it, I was working on the building of community assets in some of these very remote places. And if I were to argue that there's a thread that's taken me from northern Cameroon to the Federal Reserve, it would be that interest in building community assets. And so that sort of, even though we're sort of making the case for this combination between health and community development, for me it feels very natural, as if sort of, Well, of course. So what I want to do today is introduce to you, I'm going to start with a little bit about the Fed, and then hopefully introduce to you the Fed's interest in this space, and then place that within a broader community development context. And then we're going to look very closely at some aspects of how this is all playing out in Chicago. So I read the rules, because I'm at the Fed, and this is what I was supposed to do. So I did it, if anybody's paying attention. Okay, moving on. So a little bit about the Federal Reserve, and I think the Fed is most known for our role in setting monetary policy, and certainly what you hear in the news right now is about whether we're going to raise rates or keep them low as they are right now. And that monetary policy has two primary goals, one of which is maintaining full employment and ensuring price stability. And without taking you back to your undergraduate macro classes, that should tell you that those things are somewhat conflicting levers in a way. And so that's a challenge that many of us are facing right now. We are also, probably less well known, a bank regulator. And we work to maintain the safety and soundness of the U.S. financial system. And we also have an extensive research function that informs both our policy setting and our supervisory roles. Here, where you find yourself, there are 12 reserve banks around the country. You're in the 7th District. That's how we see the world. We serve all of Iowa, parts of Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan's Lower Peninsula. Many of you are not from this region. I encourage you to become informed about what your Federal Reserve is doing in your area, especially our community development function, and I'll give you a website at the end so you can do that. Here we have a uniquely Midwestern footprint that is both heavily industrial and rural. So a little bit about community development, the Federal Reserve. We're going to sort of narrow things in now. We also enforce what's called the Community Reinvestment Act, which is a piece of legislation passed by Congress to combat what we call redlining, which is discriminatory credit practices in low-income neighborhoods, by ensuring that banks actually lend into the communities from which they take their deposits. Every Federal Reserve Bank, and there, like I said, there are 12 of us, has a community development function, and most people don't know this. And that community development function is designed, it operates very individually, but it's designed to respond to the unique credit needs of the district it serves. And so from my standpoint as a researcher, I spend a lot of my time monitoring the credit conditions that exist in these places, specifically in low and moderate income and other underserved areas and amongst those populations. So what are credit conditions? What are we talking about when we talk about credit conditions? Credit conditions are things that are like access to jobs. Do people have the training? Can they get to these jobs? Is there safe, adequate, affordable housing? What are the educational infrastructures? Is there adequate early childhood education? Is the neighborhood stable? Are prices stable? Are home prices stable? What's happening in terms of demographics and diversity? What are the social services available to people? And so as we talk about these things, I hope that many of you from the public health side are saying, wait a second, these sound really familiar. And so the point I want to make is that what we call credit conditions, you probably all think of very much as the social determinants of health. And so my argument is that we work in many of the same places, and we look at the same things, though perhaps through a different lens. And to just drive this home, you know, once it reaches the level of the chairman of the Federal Reserve, you know you've gotten somewhere. And so this is a quote at a recent research conference by Ben Bernanke, who's the former chairman of the Federal Reserve, in which he says, factors such as educational attainment, income, access to healthy food, and the safety of a neighborhood tend to correlate with individual health outcomes in that neighborhood. And this really demonstrates how the extent to which this thinking is sort of percolating and permeating the activities of the Federal Reserve and the ways in which we're starting to realize that the socioeconomic conditions of places affect the people, the health of the people that live in those places. So moving on to the actual project, what we wanted to think about was to provide a very localized perspective on the premise that individual stressors tend to aggregate themselves into communities with poor socioeconomic status, at least the conclusion that where you live determines how long and how well you live. And we really wanted to think about this in the terms of Chicago. I think this is something sort of where you live determines how long you live is almost becoming commonplace. But let's just think about it very locally. And so for those of you not familiar with Chicago, it is divided into 77 distinct communities. And often those communities are economically and racially and ethnically homogenous. We have, like many places, persistent pockets of poverty and racial isolation, particularly on the south and west sides of the city, and we'll look at a map later. But certainly when you hear about some of the violence and issues that we have here in Chicago, those communities are particularly prevalent, unfortunately, in those discussions. So the data we use for this, we use community-level data, and we're able to join data through the City of Chicago has a wonderful data portal. It's useful for public health data. For those of us who live in the city, it's also useful for finding out how much our neighbors who work for the city, how much they make. So you can actually, there's a lot there. for this particular case, there's extensive public health data, and then we had socioeconomic data that we gathered for another project at the Fed. And so we wanted to bring those two together. And so what we found, and there's certainly no surprises here for any of you, that there were strong and significant associations between negative health outcomes and what we would consider negative community conditions, such as home vacancy rates, poverty, unemployment. In terms of education, one thing that was interesting to us is there seems to be a tipping point in education, is that obviously up to receiving a high school diploma, if that was where you stopped your education, that was correlated with negative health outcomes. The minute there was any post-secondary education, that sign flipped and became a positive health outcome. So it seems to drive home one thing that we work a lot with in community development, and certainly for those of us interested in job creation, is thinking about those post-secondary credentials, and the idea that it might actually have a health impact is interesting as well. Also, not surprisingly, we saw strong negative health outcomes correlated with the percent of the African-American population, while strong positive health outcomes were correlated with the percent of the Hispanic population and also the foreign-born population. So, again, encouraging a nuanced way of thinking about when we talk about minority populations, to think more carefully about who actually exists and what is happening in those communities. So I always joke it's not a Fed presentation until I throw up an illegible slide. So here you go. What this tells us is the descending orange line are the socioeconomic status of the 77 communities which are lined up there along the bottom. Where I live is somewhere in the middle. And the jagged lines, or the black lines higher and lower, are the health outcomes divided by quartile. And so what we really wanted, this whole idea of where you live determines how well you live, we wanted to say, all right, for communities that are in the fourth quartile socioeconomically, which means you're at the higher end of things, one would expect that you would also be in the fourth quartile for your health outcomes, and does that really hold up as we look at this really neighborhood by neighborhood? And so pretty much you can see as the line descends socioeconomically, as communities become more economically vulnerable, their health conditions tend to deteriorate, although there is a significant amount of fluctuation. And we wanted also to look further at whether there were any communities that really disrupted this. And so you'll see those two communities on the far right that are circled, and there's one bar that extends far above the orange line, so that community, which is South Lawndale, or known as Little Village, exceeds its outperforms its sort of health expectations given its socioeconomic performance by more than one quartile. The other community that's circled there that underperforms a little bit is North Lawndale, and so it's a community directly to the north. It's contiguous to South Lawndale, and so we wanted to see how these two communities that were neighbors, how they had such different outcomes. And so this is this map I promised you. There you'll see North and South Lawndale in green and red. So that gives you a little bit of a place. We are much further towards the east. As you wander around the city and you get lost, people will always tell you that the lake is always east, which is really unhelpful if you're from out of town. But it is. It's nice to know it's always east, right? So very quickly, I know I'm running out of time, but we want to see how this plays out. 2 minutes. Which means 5 minutes. So 2 minutes. So these are little spider graphs. And on the left graph are the socioeconomic quartiles, and on the right are the health quartiles of both North and South Lawndale. North Lawndale is in green, and South Lawndale is in red. And so socioeconomically there on the left, you can see they both really overlap a lot around the center of the graph. There's some diversions specifically around sort of their racial and ethnic profiles. But a lot of this is in terms of poverty, in terms of low educational attainment, in terms of home vacancy, all of these things, these are places that are very similar socioeconomically. There's one mark on there that, I'm sorry, you probably can't see it, but I'll just tell you, it's there, is we also looked at 311 service call intensity. And so the 311 service in Chicago is for non-emergencies. We specifically looked at calls that went into that that center for streetlights that are out as a proxy for determining community engagement or sort of establishing community engagement. And so unfortunately, we were very excited about having this data. Unfortunately, it didn't really show anything particularly significant in terms of the correlations. But what does show up here is that North Lawndale is in the first or the lowest quartile in terms of 311 intensity. And South Lawndale is amongst the highest communities in terms of call intensity. So there's just something interesting to think about. Looking to the right, then there's the health quartiles. And this, you'll see this sort of blown out a little bit. There's a much more dispersion across these two communities. South Lawndale in the red, much more in the fourth quartile, showing much more positive health outcomes, whereas North Lawndale remains very concentrated in the center. And so what we do in community development when we get sort of stumped is we go out and we actually talk to people. I'm going to skip over this one just in interest of time. But one thing to note, going back to the spider graphs, and this is data we didn't have when we did this project, was data around life expectancy. These two communities, again, that are neighbors, actually have 10 years difference in life expectancy. North Lawndale is 72, amongst the lowest in the city, and South Lawndale is 82, amongst the highest in the city. And so you think about what happens when you cross those borders. So again, we went out and interviewed some community leaders, both community development folks and health leaders. And probably much of this from a public health standpoint will not be a surprise to you, but it surprises us as community development folks. And so places that are largely Hispanic, they said be careful because the numbers aren't going to tell you everything. There's a lot of people missing from those numbers. A lot of people just don't want to be reported. They may seek primary care, but once there's some requirements for specialization, they will either return home or sort of seek the care outside of the system. On the one hand, things that we think of as negative, such as crowded housing amongst the Hispanic population, are not negative. You might have multiple earners living under the same roof in multiple generations. So the ability to withstand financial shocks or to care for young children exists in the home, and actually that is positive from a health outcome. And so these things become very complicated as we start crossing back and forth across these sectors, and I think it helps inform the discussion greatly. In terms of some of the health folks, specifically in North Lawndale, The thing that resonated the most with me was a story that was told to me by someone, a gentleman who runs one of our local health centers. And he says, I'll tell you a story about a baby that died. And there was this infant that lived around the corner from the health center that started and died of dehydration, and that's how it showed up on the death certificate, that this is what had caused this child to die. And so it shows up as an infant mortality statistic. And he says, but actually what happened is that the mother, who was probably very, very young, went out, and she'd had her boyfriend around who was helping her, but he was incarcerated. He'd gotten picked up on a drug charge, and so he was in prison, and so this young woman had lost her system of support. And so he says, yes, this baby died, but in reality, if you back it up far enough, the conditions were never in place to ensure its survival in the first place. And so that is the full spectrum to me of community development to public health. So where do we go from here? There is an opportunity for much collaboration across the two sectors, but we are different and we think about things differently. I think in particular we think about success differently. As Doug was saying, we are a $200 billion industry, and so we think about things in terms of transaction. We think about things in deals, housing units built, job, small business loan dollars repaid, childcare spots open. I think the challenge for us in the community development side is to think longer term and sort of expand what I would call our impact horizon to really think about the change that we can affect in these places, and I think that's where the partnership is so vital. So with that, I'm going to stop. That's my contact information if you have any questions. I didn't talk a lot about CRA, but we certainly can. That's our website. And also the fedcommunities.org is the portal to our 12, everything that the Fed system is doing in community development. So for those of you not from Chicago, I would encourage you to start there, and then you can connect from there to your local banks and find out what they're doing in your area. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Susan. That was fantastic. And I think the takeaway already with just our first two speakers is the fact that the U.S. Green Building Council and the Federal Reserve System are both really interested in health and are trying to actively determine how to partner with us in public health. And I think measurement, which is something actually I think that's one of our strengths, is what they're really looking for. The other thing I would suggest is that what I would say we do need to work on is we tend to be very good at measuring disease. We're not so good at measuring health. So figuring out what health looks like and how it can be measured and eventually monetized, because that's what will allow these types of investments, is I think a real call to action for all of us.